Psalm 131. This is going to be a really short psalm that we're going to be looking at together. And if you ever had this desire to like, you know, I just want to memorize entire chapters of the Bible. And you want to be very productive without a lot of effort, Psalm 131 is your friend. This thing is only three verses long and you can memorize it probably about the time it takes you to microwave a taco. But it was the old British preacher, Charles Spurgeon, who made this comment about it. He said, it's one of the shortest to read and yet the longest to learn how to live. It's a lot like golf. You can take it up and you can play it, but it's going to take you a while before you can master that. Well, this psalm is one of the psalms of the ascent. And we've talked about this in the previous weeks, but it was the various psalms that the Jews would sing on their pilgrimage as they made their way to Jerusalem. And in going out to Jerusalem, they would say these songs and sing them together as they hiked their way, going into the various festivals and for a big time of worship. Now, they weren't singing these songs just to keep the kids occupied, like a lot of you do when you go on road trips. You know, you play games like I Spy, and then you get them singing those repetitive songs. That is not the purpose of these psalms. They're done to prepare you before you go to a worshiping community. Because before you're going to worship collectively, there's a little dealing of me, myself, and I, prior, and my heart, prior to gathering with everyone else. So I'm going to do something different with you today. I am going to ask you to stand as we read this. So you can go ahead, Psalm 131, but here's what we're going to do different. You're going to read it with me. I'm putting it up on the screen because if we went with all the translations, we would be a mess. So we're going to do what we have up here on the screen. I'll try to keep a cadence with you. And I'm going to use the Legacy Standard Version, which all that is a little bit more literal than the New American Standard. So if that was possible. So here we go. Are you ready? Oh, Yahweh. My heart is not exalted, and my eyes are not raised high, and I do not involve myself in great matters or in matters too marvelous for me. Surely I have soothed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with his mother, like a weaned child is my soul within me. O Israel, wait for Yahweh from now until forever. Father in heaven, some of us, we need our hearts stilled and quieted. We want to come before you and to not be like Martha right now, so busy, but instead to be like Mary, to come at your feet, to be ready to worship, to learn how to love you. Would you use these next few minutes with us to do so through your word? And it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Please be seated. The psalm has two parts to it. The first, it just opens as a prayer, and then it's going to end in verse 3 with a prompt for all of us of something. It's actually a call to believe something, because the psalmist knows that when you believe, you really believe something, it affects how you live. It changes you from the inside out. And so this prayer begins by having the singer do something. He comes by checking his ego in at the door before he goes into worship. Now, a lot of times when people read this psalm, they begin to think, well, this seems like one that says you shouldn't have any aspirations, you know, that this is the ultimate call to live a life of passivity. Jesus, take the wheel. I just throw my hands up and I don't do anything and I'm not responsible for anything. But that's not at all what's going on here. Rather, it's a call to reject some of the qualities that we often bring into worship. You got to check your heart. Those two qualities in particular are going to be pride and presumption. This is going to be a rejection of selfish ambition. And are you ready for this? Control. Selfish ambition and control. By the way, do we like control? Everybody say yeah. Yeah, we love control. We almost idolize control. We only live about an hour west of the nation's capital where control supposedly happens. It's a big deal for us, but it isn't unique to us. This is a big deal for humanity. He starts out by saying, "My heart is not exalted and my eyes are not raised high." This is a call out to reject any form of pride within himself. What I can do, what it is that I have, all the powers and so forth that I bring. Because what does pride do? It always does two things. First, when I look at myself, I'll elevate myself. And the second thing I'll do is I will devalue you. Either way, it's the same net effect. I see myself as going up, or I push you down. He won't go there. In fact, if you'll remember, several weeks back when we started this series, we began with Psalm 123. And the psalm, the paramount thing that that psalm began with was a call to say, you're going to look up. Raise your eyes. You're going to look up and put your focus on God. And here, he's maintaining that focus. My focus is going to be on God. It's not going to be on me. It's not going to be on us. It's going to be on him. I will look up to you, not myself. And then he says, I don't involve myself in great matters or in matters too marvelous for me. So he's not going to be presumptuous here and overvaluing himself and what he contributes to the community, but he sees God as preeminent, and he is merely God's servant. When I was reading through this, I was thinking of a negative example behind this, and it made me remember the Old Testament king Uzziah, 2 Chronicles 26. And when it came to being a king, Uzziah was a rock star. I mean, he was there for almost five decades, or I think a little over five decades, right around that time frame. And in doing so, he built towers, he expanded the kingdom, he made weapons for war, he got the kingdom strong, and everyone looked at him and said, now that is a king. And you and I would have said the same thing. Now that's a king. That's the kind of guy you want in this position. And he used his power, and he served the nation, he served the people. And yet, he forgot Psalm 131. And his success continued to breed within him and throughout the kingdom. He got proud and he got presumptuous. And before long, he saw himself as preeminent, deciding he was so important that he was going to do something that only the priests were allowed to do. He was going to go and he was going to offer up incense within the temple, which a king was not allowed to do, was forbidden to do. So this guy walks into the temple like he owned it. And he's saying to himself, I am the VIP and the MVP, and I'm going to do God a real solid here. I'm going to go in and I'm going to offer this incense up as the king. The king will be doing this. And in some ways, you can see how this pride would work out. It's almost as if he could say, I am like Melchizedek. I have no beginning. I have no end. I am the only priest king there is out there. And he began to elevate himself. But God had not called him to that. When he got in that temple and the priests were telling him to get out, he got angry right up until they looked back in horror and they saw leprosy break out on his forehead. And God struck him with that leprosy for the rest of his days. Never was healed from it. Carried it all the way to the grave. And he was not remembered as that guy who was this phenomenal builder, this phenomenal king. From this day forward, he's always remembered as the guy who got out of his lane and tried to get in God's, and he paid for it because his eyes were raised too high. And God said, therefore, I have to bring you low, and he did. Not that long ago, just a couple weeks ago, we went on vacation. We were up in the mountains of Utah, and it was beautiful. It was phenomenal. And as we're hiking along, every hike had this great waterfall at the end of it. So each time, we're going to see something different. And as we're going along, I'm carrying my bottle of water. And the water's getting warmer and warmer as the sun is out and as we continue to walk. And I'm looking down that river, and man, I can just feel the cold coming off of it. And it is crystal clear. And I just keep looking at it thinking, man, that looks a whole lot better than what I've got in this bottle right here. And there's the temptation to drink it. And so as I'm standing there, as I'm looking, as I'm kind of pondering, I wonder if I could do this or would I get sick. I looked up river, and there is a golden retriever standing right in the middle of the river, converting it into his porcelain throne. And my hand did not even go in the water at that point. I knew, okay, we are not having anything to do with this, because the spring, if you will, became polluted, and that made the stream toxic. David says, I got to check the spring of my heart. I got to make sure this thing isn't polluted before I go into the worship with everybody else and alongside others. In fact, I would even like to suggest checking your heart is a form of worship. It's making sure I'm right with you, God, and my eyes aren't on me and my greatness. Now, last week, one of the things Pastor David talked about in the psalm that he was looking at is he says, often the Jewish writers, they give a truth, and then unlike Americans where we just give you the data, the Jews would give you the data, but then they paint a picture. This is what it looks like, and this is what it's like. And it's in verse 2 of this psalm that the writer paints a painting for us, where he says, surely I have soothed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with his mother. And then he repeats it, like a weaned child is my soul within me. Now, thinking back on our own hike, when I think about the travelers, one of the things you know is when you got young kids, there's a lot of noise. And there's going to be kids that are crying. And there's going to be the really young ones that want their drink. They want their milk. They want their mom. They want their dad. But I can't help but think as these travelers are going along, you know, they're carrying these things, and the baby wants food. The baby wants milk. So we got to stop, take care of this child, and then we can proceed. And you know there was a lot of tears because you've experienced this too if you've ever been on a trip with a little baby or with a young child. They want milk. They want their fruit snacks. Now they want their iPads so they can sit down and watch their movies and you know, enjoy themselves on the trip. A weaned one, though, isn't going to cling to mom merely to get something from her. The weaned one clings to mom because that child wants mom, wants to be close to her. And again, this was, I'm relating it to this Utah hikes that we went on recently. There's one point we're going up this one trail, and we've got, in our family, we have 7 kids all under age 5. So, you know, there's a lot of noise going up this hike. But there was a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old in particular that were going along, and the 3-year-old was not happy. She wanted to be free. She wanted to just go where she wanted to go, and Dad's like, no, because I know how this works. You'll start going up the hill, then you'll go squirrel, and you'll follow it right off the edge of a cliff, and then we'll never see you again. So takes the child, holds her by the hand, walks her along, and so there's a lot of crying, and there's a lot of being upset because it's like, I know what I want. I want what I want. I don't want what you want me to do. And so that just continued for a big chunk of the way up the top. Once we got to the top, we're sitting around the waterfalls. It's beautiful. It's phenomenal up there. It's time to come down, and guess what? Everybody's tired. All of us are tired. And the 2-year-old and the 3-year-old in particular wanted to be picked up. In fact, the 3-year-old, she wouldn't say, pick me up. She would say, hold you, hold you. So her dad held her, picked her up, carried her down. 2-year-old, he's exhausted. And so his dad picks him up, puts him there. They go down the trail. They're not down there. 10 minutes down the trail, that little boy is sound asleep, conked. And in being asleep, one of the things I noticed when I was watching this unfold is we're like, you know, what an advantage he gets because he doesn't have to go through all the pain of going down. He just sleeps, and when he wakes up, we're at the car, and he can go back to watching Looney Tunes on the little screen in the van. His life is good, but he was content. He was just resting on his dad. And this goes back to something what Andrew was just saying a minute ago. He didn't know I was going to use this verse, so you stole my thunder, sir. But the Apostle Paul said in Philippians 4, I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. Ladies and gentlemen, that is called a quiet trust in the Lord. You're resting in Him. And too often, this is where we struggle. You do it, and I do it. We have a hard time trusting. And this is the long lesson in the short psalm. I think of when Abraham took Isaac to the mountain to obey God and to sacrifice his son. And, you know, there's estimates that Isaac was actually not like what you saw in those children's Bibles as this little kid. More than likely, he may have been 20 to 25 years of age. He's an adult, and he goes, and here's Abraham, and he ties him up, getting him ready to be a sacrifice from the altar. And what does he do? He lets his father tie him. That is trust. That is confidence that your dad knows what he's doing. And he allowed himself to go that way, surrendering himself unto his father. And it's a preview of what we see in the New Testament with Jesus with his father in the Garden of Gethsemane. Yes, he can pray, Lord, if it's possible, can this cup pass for me? Can we do that? Yet, not what I will, but yet what you will. That's what I'm willing to do. And in the end, what was it? It's a quiet, confident trust in the Lord, even when the finger points to a cross and says, see that horrific place? That's where I want you to go. And he could go there confident that the Father knew what he was doing in calling him to do something like that. He didn't argue with the Father's pay grade. Jesus was in full trust all the way to and through the cross. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Psalm 131. You get there by fostering a quiet and continuous faith. And that, I'd like to suggest, that's a lifestyle of worship. It's more than singing. Verse 3, with the prayer completed, now we get the prompt to the fellow travelers and the worshipers, where he says, O Israel, wait for Yahweh from now until forever. And there's the challenge. In the times when you're going through your fears, your worries, your unrest, those times where you're lacking security and you're just not sure, those times when you have disease, you're feeling a sense of despair, the money has run out, the job hasn't come through, all these things, this is when you're prompted to remember, trust and obey. God, I can trust you. I will obey and I will follow you. It's a call to hope and it's a remembrance to yourself that God is trustworthy. And he is. He is. We often find ourselves, I feel like, at one of two settings. We're either writhing or we're resting. All too often, I discover I'm writhing. It's out of control. I don't know what I'm going to do. How do we fix this? Just before the service, Andrew mentioned it, the power went out. And so the whole building is shut down. And we're all standing around there going, what are we going to do? And so I thought, I have no idea what we're going to do. And got in the foyer, and I said, all right, team, this is what we got to do. We got to get something going here. So I pointed to Josh and Christian Lipscomb. Where are you guys? Over here. Pointed to them and said, you guys are going to pray while we come up with a plan. And then about 10 seconds later, boom, power comes back on. If you need somebody to pray for something for you, they were just thinking about praying. And God answered. But I literally thought in my brain, I'm already having to apply the sermon. And am I going to writhe or am I going to rest? But just take an action. Go the next step with what we know. And that's it. We'll leave everything else to God. And Jesus demonstrated this. In fact, he explains it in John 4:34 when he said, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. A lot of you thought it was President Obama that came up with the expression, that's above my pay grade. And Jesus is the one who could say it first. It was at his pay grade. And yet, he submitted to the Father to go to the cross. And he took the penalty of our sins upon himself. That's why these travelers, in walking along and in going, getting their hearts ready for worship, could say, God, whatever you have for me today, I'll obey it. I'll go there. I'll do that. I will trust the rest of the journey. I will trust my tomorrow with you. I'm not going to run away. I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to whine about my circumstances or situation or try and fix it as if it depends on me. That's the key. As if it depends on me. That I'm doing this independently. Instead, my life is going to be an act of worship in a quiet trust in God, shown by how I'm going to obey him in whatever it is before me. You think there's ways that we can apply this? Covers all of our lives. Let me just tackle a few of them with you here. What about our social media today? You know, we live in this day and age in which of the digital justice warrior, and we feel the need to have our marvelous opinion go out there and bless the world with all that we think and our knowledge on the latest outrages, whether you want to talk about ballrooms in the White House, Baptists and women leadership, the border, big tech, bailouts and billionaires. And we'll spend hours working on the latest burn of how we're going to emerge from this victorious. And we will defend and represent God in this, or our own pride while doing so. Now, don't get me wrong. There are times where we have to speak. I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm addressing. What I'm addressing is what happens more often than not. We're not so much interested in where people are as much as we're interested in venting our spleen. And when I can vent my spleen and come out on top, that is a seedbed for pride more often than not. And it's not good. And so we smoke our opponents while we hone our debating skills and our statements. And I wonder, what if, and by the way, you can do this sometime. Go on your iPhone, your other phone, go into your settings, call up battery, look on battery, and it'll break down all the apps that you're on and how much time you spend on each one. And what if you looked at your social media apps, how many minutes you were on it a day, and you made a commitment for every minute I'm going to be on social media, I'm going to spend 2 minutes in prayer before God. Some of you wouldn't see the light of day. You got 3 hours on social media, that means you got about 6 hours, 9 hours, depending on how long you spend, in prayer. You're out of commission. Now, a lot of times I'll say that and I'll throw out this little joke. That's too convicting. Let's move on. I'm not going to say that joke this time. If that's convicting, that's probably not a bad thing. What are we doing when we get onto these things? I think if we did this, first off, we'd be a whole lot more pleasant to be around. We would be a little less twitchy as we go throughout the day and think about all the things and the scores we got to settle with the online world. And we more than likely would be a whole lot more focused on the things at our eye level and the responsibilities God has given us that we can do something about, instead of forsaking that to speak about the things that, frankly, we can't do anything about. Psalm 131, he says, I'm not going to worry about the things too great for me. I'm going to take care of what God has given to me right here. And that's where I'm going to live, and that's where I'm going to trust. Then there's other issues of life, too, that are hard to have a quiet soul about. One of those has to do with just the daily stresses of life. Y'all got work deadlines? Yes, you do. I do, too. Sometimes some of you are involved in these discussions of faith, and they get antagonistic. People get antagonistic with you when you bring certain things up. And before long, your mind just starts going into these mental arguments that we begin to make, right? And we're spending this time thinking about, well, this is what I'll say next time, and this is how I'll solve this problem next time, and this is what I plan on giving them and telling them what to do next time. What do you do with that? I'm going to give you a great tip. Book that I recently was referred to. It's called Powerful Self-Talk from the Psalms by John Gagauer. And what this book does is this individual, he takes 40 different verses in the Psalms, challenges you to memorize them. And then when your mind starts spinning and you start thinking about all that stuff that you're going to say, do like David and convert that into a self-talk or into prayer talk. And before long, instead of talking about what you're going to do to this person or how you're going to do it, you start landing and moving mentally in your heart, spiritually, in a direction in which you're looking at, how would God have me to respond? What can I trust in? It's a powerful thing. This has blessed me. In those times when I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and my mind is just going, just spinning, and I'll stop and I'll just begin to pray and I will go over some of these verses and just begin to quote them to myself, speaking them to myself in the middle of the night. It is transformational. It's learning how to quiet your soul. It's learning how to wait on God. And then there's another issue that affects all of us at some point, and that has to do with issues of health and safety. And on this one, I just want to, let me pass on a true story in which I've taught, I have been taught a lot about this recently. Just over 3 weeks ago, my younger brother gives me a call, and then he's talking with me. He says, well, I got bad news. I have a cancerous tumor. Is that so? Yeah. Now, my brother is a computer engineer, and he's very good at what he does. He fixes things. You don't get to fix a tumor. You don't get to fix this. So as a result, he's been going to doctors, figuring out what's the next step, what has to happen, what has to occur. He's been asking for a lot of people to pray for him. And in one instance in particular, a pastor friend of his came by, prayed with him, and in the discussion and praying with him, he said, there's an individual I want you to meet. Just happens to be an elder in the church where my niece attends church. And he says, I want you to meet this fellow. He is a physician. He is also a cancer survivor. And he has made it his sort of side hustle, if you will, his side mission. He's not getting paid for this. But his mission to come alongside people when they go through something like this and to help them, to counsel them as they go along. So my brother says, we'll take anything we can get. So the individual's name is Mr. Cummings, Dr. Cummings. Dr. Cummings shows up and he's beginning to talk with him and just, you know, hear different things. And he just gives him a couple of reminders. And he says, now, before I tell you anything, I just want you to know something. I am what you call a 100% man. 100% man? Okay. What? Great. What does that mean? He goes, I am learning to trust God with 100% of everything. He said, before I got cancer, I was a 60% man. I trusted God with 60% of everything, and I was going to cover the other 40% because I'm a self-starter, I'm a controller, I get things done, and I make them happen. And he said, you don't get to do that anymore. Here's what you're going to have to do. He said, the first thing you're going to have to do, you got to be an advocate for yourself. By being an advocate, you talk to the doctors, you ask your questions, you make your phone calls, you do all of these things, you come to the understanding, and you know, you do those things that you have to do. He says, but being an advocate is one end of the spectrum. He says, where you don't want to go is be in control. And if you try to control this, you're going to drive yourself crazy. You're going to go nuts out there because you'll just be consumed in anger and anxiety. Advocate in your prayer. Do not seek to control. And just keep reminding yourself, 100%. I'm going to trust God with 100%. So one day in particular, he had a phone call. He was talking to the oncologist. The oncologist says, look, I don't know what we can do as far as this plan. I'm not your guy. You need to talk to your surgeon. Call him. Y'all get this path, then come back to me. So he goes, okay, I'll do that. So he calls the surgeon. No answer. Calls, leaves a message. Calls, no answer. Calls, leaves a message. And he's like, okay, I'm advocating, but now I'm reaching the point where I'm trying to control it because my anxiety is going up. And my anger is going up because time is essential. We can't let this loiter. We can't just hang on with this. We got to get some results here. So he's getting stressed out about it, and his wife walks in, and she says, what's going on? And he says, well, the doc won't call me. I called him, you know, third call or whatever this morning. I haven't heard anything yet. And she goes, okay, well, then let's do what Dr. Cummings said, and let's pray. He goes, oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe we can do that. So they prayed. 80 seconds later, the phone rings. 80 seconds. It's the surgeon. He says, hey, been looking over your file. This is what we got. This is what we're going to do. And he begins to sort of work through the whole process of what all it's going to be and what all is going to be required and telling them how to proceed. Now, I don't share that with you to tell you that God's going to answer your prayer in less than 2 minutes. All right? He's not like a microwave timer. But I tell you that to say he is trustworthy. He is. And it built my brother's faith in the moment to think, if I can trust you with this, then I can trust you with the other stuff that I still have yet to go through. And my brother had to say, God, this is a matter that is just too great for me. I can't solve it. So as we go down this mountain of a trial of faith, I'm going to rest in your arms. And while I rest in your arms, I'm going to let you carry me. And I will trust you. I will quiet my soul like a weaned child. To the point, he told me this. I would never wish this on anybody, but this has been a gift to me, this cancer. He says, because it has taught me this entirely new level of trust and given me this entire new perspective on who God is and his trustworthiness. A gift. You can't get there. You cannot get there unless you've weaned your soul. You've weaned. You've given these things up. And now you're a 100% person. I'll advocate, but God, 100%. Whether it's health, job, finances, relationships, 100%. And it's what it's teaching me is sometimes when we examine sort of the anatomy of worship through all this, we find that it might just look like the time where we stop trying to control the universe. That would be an act of worship to him. I'm a 100% man. I'm a 100% woman at this time, resting in you while I obey you with what I know in the meantime. So worship, it isn't just what we sing. At times, it's just the quiet surrender of our need to be in control. And that can be an act of worship. It is an art of staying in your own lane and letting God drive the bus while you faithfully do what it is that he's called you to do. Because trying to drive that bus, not only is it a big job, the benefits are terrible, and frankly, the position has already been filled by God. So you don't need it. As an act of worship, operate at your pay grade and let God operate at his. Psalm 131 tells us what kind of people to be, 100%. In fact, say it with me. What kind of people are we going to be? 100%. What kind of people are you going to be? 100%. Now, it's easy to say. Can be hard to do. And we're going to have to remind one another of this. I might be the first one you have to remind. We're going to be 100% people. Incidentally, Psalm 131, I don't know if you realize this or not, but this is how all of us actually come into a relationship with God to begin with. This is where our spiritual path begins. We can't fix our sin. We can't attain unto a holiness. We can't achieve a righteousness that brings us unto God. And so right off the bat, we're looking at this and go, this is too high for me. I can't attain to it. What am I going to do? All we can do is look up to the cross. And we look up to the cross and we see God is taking care of it through Jesus Christ, his son. And then we know that righteousness can come to us. How do we know? Because then we look from the cross, we look at an empty grave. We see where the payment was made and where God gave proof that he received that payment when he brought Jesus back from the dead. And now we can stand in a humble confidence of going, it's too great for me. I don't know what to do. But here's what I'll do. I'll wean myself from all these works, all these deeds, all these ways to get God to like me. I'll let those go. And now I'll rest in his arms and let him carry me down the mountain. And if you've never done that, right after the service, I'm going to be right here. I would consider it a privilege to be able to talk with you, to help you, to think through what that means and what that looks like. And for the rest of us, how we began the Christian life is how we continue to live it. Exact same way. Trusting him, obeying what's before us, and giving everything over to him, and weaning our hearts.